So we have studied about the four castes, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra. Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra. And Krishna says these are based not on birth, not on family, but upon your qualities and your actions. So depending on the kind of job you do, depending on your qualities, you can be a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya or Shudra. And even it is all over the world. Brahmanas are the researchers, the professors. Kshatriyas are the leaders. Vaishyas are the business people, professionals. And Shudras are the workers. And that class is there all over the world. Unfortunately, in India, they made it based on family. That if I'm a Brahmana, my son automatically should be a Brahmana. So that's not the original intention of that. And in the olden days, people could move from one class to another. If you were born in a family of workers, but if you were intelligent, you could become a teacher or a professor, which is, even now happens. If you are a business person's family, but you know you are have leadership qualities, you can become a leader of the country. But the idea was that the four castes should work in harmony. They are all equally important. You need the workers, you need business people, you need leaders, and you need scholars. And to think that one is superior to the other was the biggest problem. And that's a lot of our leaders, Mahatma Gandhi, Lokmanya Tilak, and so on, try to eradicate this evil of untouchability, that the lower castes are somehow inferior or untouchable, which is wrong. Because, I mean, if there's no people cleaning the streets, you know, I mean, what's going to happen? If there are no workers in the factories, no workers in the farms. So working together and doing your duty was required, and that is the essence of the karma yoga of the Bhagavad Gita. And these next few verses that we're doing today summarizes karma yoga. As we said in the beginning, the 18th chapter is a summary of all the verses, all the chapters of the Bhagavad Gita are summarized in the 18th chapter. And not doing your duty is a sin. Sin means not performing your duty, not working in collaboration with others, not working in harmony in your family, at your work is wrong. And last week we had started discussion about hate the sin, not the sinner. I think so you said, and some people said they wanted a little more explanation of that. But that's a very interesting topic, and I think it was towards the end. So I'll take the liberty of spending a few minutes, instead of going to the verse, to this subject about hate the sin, not the sinner. There's actually a lot of thinking to be done, a lot of discussion in this. First of all, the word hate should be removed from the dictionary. Whenever you say I hate somebody, then automatically you are creating a negative connotation in your mind. So your mind is already thinking anger, you know, dislike. So you can say, I disapprove, I want to change, I want to correct. But the moment it hits these, I hate this food, I hate my parents. So the word hate should be removed from the dictionary. It should not be used by anybody. So that's number one. Because the moment you say, I hate somebody, even if you're hating the sin or the hating the sinner or whatever, you are automatically creating a negative connotation in your mind. So the idea should be change the sin or modify the sin, but disapprove of the sinner or try to change the sinner. So change the sin and the sinner, that should be the first point. Now, they say do not hate the sinner. So why is that? First of all, as I said, when you use the word hate, then you are automatically, even the person may be very bad, maybe constantly bothering you, maybe a source of trouble to you, to society, maybe a suicide bomber, maybe a mass killer, serial killer. The word hate the sinner means you are already judging. See, you are judging this person, that this person is somehow doing the wrong thing. So the question is, who are you or I to judge? If anybody should judge anybody, it should be the Lord above or his own karmas. At the end of it, it is not the Lord who judges. It is my own karmas for which I will pay the price. That's number one. Number two, if the person is doing something wrong, there may be serious problems through which he has gone through. Maybe he had a terrible childhood. Maybe he was abused as a child by his uncle or grandfather, and that's why he became a child abuser. So we don't know what is the person's background. So if I start hating the individual, I'm already judging. Secondly, I'm bringing myself down to his level. He is doing bad and I hate him, so I'm doing equally bad. Then how am I any better than him? That person is doing wrong. So your idea is you should try and change him. You should try and help him, understand him, or if nothing else, forgive him. Because if you forgive, then automatically your mind is clear. You say, I have forgiven him. Whatever bad he has done, let the Lord take care of him, or let his karmas take care of him. In my heart, I have no anger towards him. I have no hostility. So when my mind is forgiving, that's why Jesus says, and all the scriptures say, forgive. Forgiveness is a very, very powerful virtue, because then you say, Mahatma Gandhi also said, I have forgiven the British no matter what they have done to me, whatever they have done to our country. So when you can forgive a person, then automatically you become better than that person. Better does not mean superior, but at least I don't have any negativity. That person may continue to have negativities towards me, but I don't have any negativities. So if the person persistently keeps doing bad, even you keep forgiving him, so we're not saying you become a doormat. You have the right to correct him. Suppose a person is coming at you with a gun towards your house. You don't say, I forgive him and I open the door and love thy neighbor. No. You close the door, you turn on the alarm, you call 911, you know, have him arrested. You know, if you have to testify, even testify. You do whatever is required to correct the situation without having inner hatred or inner anger towards that individual. Then when the person is doing wrong, the sin, again, you don't hate the sin, but the idea is to improve the situation. If I can help that person get better, or if I can improve the person is doing something wrong, I can. If not, I avoid that situation. I avoid that person. The person is persistently harmful, persistently hateful. I avoid him. I say, okay, you go about doing your thing. But suppose you cannot avoid him. Suppose he's a spouse or a neighbor or a co-worker. Then you say, I accept you. I forgive you and I accept what you are. You are this. Okay, that's how you are. That's how your nature. Maybe again, like we said, maybe it was your childhood. Maybe you were mistreated. Maybe the circumstances have been bad. So I understand, I forgive, and I accept you as you are. The moment you do that, your mind is at peace. Even if the person is doing wrong, ultimately, the law of karma will take over everybody. That's the one point, that the law of karma will take. And I, in my mind, have no anger, no hatred, no jealousy, no. This is at the worldly level, what we are talking. At the worldly level, this is how you deal with a difficult situation. How about at the highest level? So the Upanishads say that we are all Brahman. We are all that reality, the cosmic reality, the Brahman, the consciousness. We all are, because we all came from that. Just as everything that comes from mud is mud, whether you make a pot or you make a saucer or a plate or a blue or a green or a yellow or a red, all are nothing but mud. All ornaments came out of gold, so they are nothing but gold. You may have different shapes, sizes, colors, names, decoration, put gold, put diamonds, put everything is nothing but gold. So when we originated from that Brahman, then we are nothing but that consciousness. And we all are, whether he's a good person or he's a bad person. God is as much in Mahatma Gandhi as he was in Hitler, as he was in Mother Teresa. God is equal in everybody. So when I hate, of course, why people are different, again, that is because of their vasanas, because of their tendencies, because of their swabhava, we talked last time. Because of their inclinations, because of society, because of how they were treated. Or they were born with certain vasanas from previous birth. So, but if I hate somebody, I'm hating God. Right? God is there and Krishna is there in everybody. Jesus is there in everybody. Buddha is there in everybody. So how can I hate a person? The moment you say I hate him, I'm hating God. So, at the highest level, it is one consciousness. I see that my oneness in all. And I inside, I say God is there in her and her and him and him, and he's there in everybody. It does not mean that you do not do anything to overcome that person's wrong tendencies. Like we said, if you need to have him arrested, you need to do something about, do it. But inside, your mind should be peaceful. And ultimately, that is what is most important, peace of mind. That is what we are doing everything for. We are eating for peace of mind. We are sleeping for peace of mind. We are working. We are earning. Everything we are doing is for peace of mind, whatever we, you know, we study. So if the peace of mind is not there, then what is the use? You know, then life becomes, so the all the problem, the sukha and dukkha that they talk about is nothing but agitations of the mind. And agitated mind is sorrow. A peaceful mind is happy. So protect your peace of mind. Do not let anybody invade your peace of mind. Be very protective that I have to keep my mind happy, keep my mind peaceful, let the person do whatever he wants. I will not be disturbed. So this is in brief summary of this sentence, hate the sin, not the sinner. I hope I have been able to address it a little bit. Any questions or comments about this, or should we move on?
I think it has to do with a lot of patience and perseverance to even get close to that point.
Right.
And because there is such a wide spectrum between good and evil, that patient perseverance, you know, goes a long way.
Yeah, and he was ready to give up his life. He had no fear. So that also, when this knowledge comes, and then it makes you fearless. That's why one of God's names is Abhaya Pradam. Shiva, one of his names is Abhaya Pradam, one who gives you fearlessness. When you realize that I am that immortal entity, Brahman, that consciousness, then nothing can destroy me. That's what Krishna tells Arjuna. He says, look, nothing can destroy you. Water cannot wet you. Weapons cannot cut you. Fire cannot burn you, because you are not this body. You are the soul. You are the infinite consciousness occupying this body. Once you have understood that, then you become fearless. And even if my body dies, so what? You know. But we have such a strong identification with this body. It's very difficult to fathom that. But wise people can do that. And that's what you and I have to work on. And that's why when you meditate, you distance yourself. You say, I'm not this body. I'm not the mind. I'm not the intellect. I am that Chidananda Rupaha Shivoham Shivoham. I am that supreme consciousness. So that is the essence of Vedanta, the essence of spirituality, that you are not this body. This is not your first birth. You have had thousands of births before, and you will continue to have until you realize the truth, until you become one with God. And that's what this book is telling us. Once you realize your true entity, then your birth and death is over. Then you are achieved moksha, sainthood. Yes.
When you're single, you're more fearless. But as you get married and you have children, you become more fearful. Attached to your children, and you feel more fearful because you have children. So how do you overcome that?
No, that's true. You see, you should take it as a responsibility instead of fear, that I have this responsibility which I have to fulfill. But ultimately, they are not my children. They are God's children. He has sent them to me to be a caretaker. If for some reason, if I am not there tomorrow, the children will still grow up. They'll still, you know, I mean, it's unfortunate, but, you know, we have children who are without parents and they still do fine. So I'm not saying that it's okay to not to have parents, but to think that I own the children or somehow I possess them is wrong. They've been sent to me by God as a caretaker. They are my children, but I am a caretaker, just as when you are in a rented house. You don't have any ownership of the house. You say, if somebody else owns the house, I am just renting it. So similarly, these children have been given to me as on rent by God. So they are in my house for 18 years. I do my best to take care of them. I love them. I do my best for them. I give them a good future, give them a good education, and then let them go. So the sense of ownership is not there. Once the ownership is not there, then the fear automatically gets less. But we are not saying you don't have responsibility. You know, mothers who abandon their children or on drugs and all are committing a lot of wrong deeds, because you bring a child into this world and don't take care of them. It's absolutely a sinful situation. But to think that I own the children or I am responsible for what happens to them, that again is a source of stress, because I didn't do good enough, that's why my child didn't turn out good, is again a wrong understanding. I do my best, and ultimately it is his karmas, his vasanas, and that will determine how the child turns out.
Because sometimes you worry about their well-being or their safety, and that's coming out of fear.
Yeah, well, that, of course, you know, you have to be careful. I mean, you know, especially a girl, you don't want her going out late at night, or you're more fearful, even for boys, but especially you don't want her to come home late at night if she's gone. So those fears are there, obviously. So that you have to take care of those. Yeah, you have to take care of your children and all. But my personal fear gets less as I get this knowledge. I have less fear of everything. God is there. He will protect my child. You know, he will protect me. So it makes you more secure about yourself. It may not make you completely fearless, but gives you more security. Okay. I think we can go to the next verse. So as Krishna said, Brahmanas have certain qualities. They should have. They should have the right knowledge. They should have self-control. They should have forgiveness. They should have austerity, knowledge. And for the Kshatriyas, they should have leadership, they should have, you know, efficiency, ability to withstand challenges. And for Vaishyas, they should be good in business. And Shudras should be good workers. So that is the qualities of these four castes that we have finished. So today we'll do verse number 45. Sve sve karmanya bhirataha. Samsiddhim labhate narah. Svakarma niratas siddhim. Yatha vindati tat shrunu. Krishna should have worked in an advertising agency. He was very good in promoting things. You know, just as when there's a new movie coming out, they give a trailer, you know, highlights. You know, it's the greatest movie of all time. Or a new product, a new iPhone, you know, i7 is coming out. So they will give little teasers, you know, these are the features it might have. We don't know everything. So Krishna also, whenever he has an important topic coming up, he will dedicate one verse to promoting it. He'll say, now, the next I'm going to talk about this topic is very important, Shrunu. The moment he says listen, that means something important is coming up. So he says, what I'm going to tell you, which is actually very, very important, is Sve Sve Karmani Abhirataha. So Sve Sve, in your own karmas, whatever your karma is, if you are qualified to be a Brahmana, do that. If you are qualified to be a Kshatriya, do that. Abhirataha, totally engaged in that. Whatever job you have taken up, do it with full attention, full faith, full concentration. Do not do anything half-hearted. Either don't take up a project. If you do it 100%. Either you say, mere se nahi hoga, you know, I can't do it. Or if I'm going to take up, so wherever I am, if I'm a mother, I should be the best mother. If I'm an engineer, I should be the best engineer. If I'm a student, I should be the best student. If I'm executive, I should be the best executive. If I'm a worker, I should be the best. So be the best you were in your field. Sve sve karmani abhirataha sam siddhim labhate naraha. So such a person who is doing his karmas with full dedication reaches the siddhi. What do we mean by siddhi? Siddhi means the highest goal of life. What is the highest goal of life? Is moksha, becoming one with God, realizing God. So people think you only have to go to the forest and meditate and sit for 15 years in the... No, you don't have to do that. Even whatever work you are doing, if you do it well, you can reach that highest goal. Yes, the path of meditation is easier. If you have taken sannyas and you have no family responsibilities, you're living in solitude, it is much easier to evolve than to be in the family, you know, because then there's, like she said, so many problems and conflicts and children. But a person doing his duty, even in a family, even in a home, can reach the highest, even in business. Like we talked last week about Janak Maharaj, you know, who was a continued to be a king and was a realized master. Sam siddhim labhate naraha swa karma nirata siddhim, doing his own karma yatha vindati tat shrunu. So listen from me, how a person even doing his or her own duty continues to progress high. So what he says, do your duty and dedicate it to God. Dedicated to the higher, dedicated to the nation, dedicated to God, dedicated to my community, you know, not for me, but I'm working for others. And all great Mahatmas, all great leaders dedicated their life. And why he's telling Arjuna? Because Arjuna was a warrior. See, he was working in the field and he wanted to take the path of the Upanishads, you know, meditate and go and sit in the forest. And he said, you are not qualified for that. You have so many vasanas, you have so many tendencies which are warlike. You were born a warrior. You were trained as a warrior from childhood. You were one of the best archers in the country. And you have fought so many battles. So now is the time for you to save the country from evil. And you have not achieved the maturity of the Upanishad student. See, the Upanishad student has understood the world. He has realized that the world is not going to give me happiness. So he, understanding that, he approaches a teacher with humility. Now that is different. See, you are not at that level. So the highest can be achieved if you do your swabhava. You do what you are supposed to do. Suppose somebody has a musical talent, should be a musician. Somebody has writing talent, should be a writer, should not be forced. And we'll talk a little more about that later. So follow your swabhava, and doing your duty, you can reach the highest. Actually, I read a very beautiful story, so I'll share it with you. So there was this person named John, a young man, and he goes to this grocery store, and there is this Mr. Miller, who is an older person, who is the owner of the grocery store, and his wife, Mrs. Miller. So they have a small little store. And so this guy is buying his groceries and paying for it. And then this young boy comes and he's just staring at the peas. You know, there's a beautiful peas. So the man says, what's wrong? You like those peas? He says, yeah, I really like them. You know, I wish I could eat them. He said, well, take them. He said, I don't have any money. So Mr. Miller says, do you have a marble? He says, yeah, I have a very precious blue marble that I really like, my favorite. So I don't like blue marble. Take these peas, gives him a bag. He said, take these peas, bring me a red marble tomorrow or next time you come to this store. I don't like blue marbles. So he goes, so this guy is wondering, you know, I mean, what kind of deal is that? You know, he gave him a red, and that also, I'll take it next time. Next time he goes to the store, there's another kid, and same thing, he asks him, you know, would you like these potatoes or whatever? He says, yeah, I haven't eaten. He says, well, take them. He says, I'm very poor. He says, you have anything? He says, I have this, you know, red marble. I don't like red marble. Bring a purple marble and you can take these potatoes. So he gives him potatoes. Take here the marbles. So this guy asked the wife, what's the deal with this guy? You know, what does he do? He says, that's how he is. And there are these three children who are very poor. And when they come, he'll always tell them what kind of marble you have. If you don't have that, he'll say, give me the red one. So he's always asking for red marble or some marble they don't have. And that's how he has been helping these kids all these years. So this guy is very impressed. Anyway, he goes off, and a few years later, he hears that Mr. Miller died. So he says, let me go to his funeral. You know, so he goes to the funeral. So there is a long line of his friends and all. And at the end of the line, there are three young men, you know. One is an army officer with all the purple heart and everything. And two are very distinguished executives wearing suit and tie, looking very, and they're at the end of the line. And so they go there, shake the wife's hand, Mrs. Miller's hand, and, you know, give her a hug. And then they go to Mr. Miller and hold his hand, you know, and Mr. Miller, of course, was dead, and they leave. So he asks, who are these three men? She says, they are those same three boys. And when he goes to Mr. Miller and looks at his hand, they had given him 3 red marbles. Because he had never taken marbles from them in his life. So they said, we have to pay the debt. And she said, my husband is so lucky. This actually brought tears to my eyes. The story this morning is such a powerful story. Through that simple act, he changed 3 people and made them outstanding citizens. He doesn't need to go to church. If he goes, it's good. If he doesn't go, it doesn't matter. He doesn't need to read the Upanishads. He doesn't need to do nothing. Just by that action, he has reached the highest. He has become one with God. And he has changed, you know, people's lives. And such a powerful story. You know, so that's how we can do that. Wherever you are, it doesn't matter. But if you do your duty and do it as a service to God and dedicate to God, you can reach the highest. So it's such a beautiful verse. It's such a, you know, so Krishna will expound more on that, about dedicating and doing your duty and according to your swabhava, according to your nature. So we'll talk a little more about that in the next 2 or 3 verses. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pasyantu, ma kaschid dukha bhag bhavet. Om shanti shanti shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.